Hello, and welcome once again to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist. And as always here on Natural Doc Radio, I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin, and we are about to bring you news for your good health that you need to know about. Hi, Dr. Slavin.
Hi, Janet. And we've been on the radio for a long time now. I've been on since the early 90s, I think.
No, it's actually before that, because I remember seeing you and hearing you on the radio, and I believe it was maybe 1987, 88. Mm-hmm. So we're, I don't want to say it, pushing 30 years? No, it can't be.
And we've been going to conferences for a long time. And I remember one of the first conferences I went to back in the early 1990s, one of the speakers talked about fluoride. And I have to tell you, as a physician and as just a regular person, whoever gave fluoride a second thought, you knew it was in the water and you were told it was good for you, and nobody ever gave it a second thought.
Oh, going back.
When did you first hear about it, though?
Well, it's interesting because the town where I live has held two different town meetings where citizens were offered the opportunity to get up and discuss their views. And I've attended both of them. And I'm going to say, yeah, probably 1990 was the first time. And you think, okay, with all of the information, the towns would get it and stop poisoning their populations. But for some reason, the corporate sales routine is stronger than the citizens' voices.
Well, what they told us back then was, first of all, fluoride is a toxic waste byproduct of the fertilizer industry. There was absolutely no proof that it prevented dental caries. And in studies, there was no proof. And here's the kind of studies they did. They looked at towns where the water was fluoridated versus similar types of towns where it wasn't fluoridated. And they compared the incidence of dental caries, and there was no difference. And yet to this day, they're still adding fluoride to the water without the public's consent. Did you ever vote on it?
I truly never voted on it. And what's very, very interesting is when you call the water department in the town where I live, they will tell you, no, there is no fluoride added to the water. And when you ask for that in writing, that you're told, oh, no, they could never do that. And what's very, very interesting is, in addition to the whole fluoride issue, we are no longer having chlorine added to the water, but rather a different molecular structure called chloramine. And I have to say, I don't necessarily know what is the difference. And no, I never voted on any of it.
It's probably a distinction without a difference.
A distinction without a difference. Well, I'm really very concerned about chloramine because I've never heard of it.
It's actually, I think it's a byproduct of chlorine.
Mm-hmm.
When it combines with other things, and you get chloramine.
Okay.
So it's really, like I said, it's no different.
You kind know,
it's of got the same,
like nitrates and nitrites, where nitrosamines.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So we've known for over 30 years that it doesn't prevent dental cavities, yet they still keep saying it does. But here's what's more important. It can do harm, and that's been shown too. And not just dental fluorosis, because that's the stains that the teeth get when children consume fluoridated water. The introduction of fluoride to the water can lead to an increased absorption of lead. Interesting.
Okay, so here we go.
That's just
increased
one thing.
Increased absorption of lead, and down the road, that increasing level of lead deposits in the bones minimizes the person's ability to utilize calcium to maintain bone density, ultimately a diagnosis of osteopenia or osteoporosis?
Well, they actually call that skeletal fluorosis. You know, the teeth get stained, but so do the bones.
Right.
And that that weakens the bones, increases the risk of fractures. But more importantly, bone cancer, osteosarcoma, has been associated with.
Wow.
Of course, the fluoride can cause genetic damage and cell death. It can interfere with the production of collagen, increase tumor and cancer rate. It affects the sperm and increases infertility. Been associated with, now here's something that I can't say I've heard it, and maybe you have, hyperactivity and or lethargy. So it affects your mood.
I have to say no, that's a new one for me. Two of them that I'm thinking of, they have documented in seniors an increased risk of hip fracture, and in boys who are given fluoride supplementation or exposed to fluoride, they have an increased risk of leg fracture when they're given fluoride after the age of 12. Between the ages of 5 and 12, not so much of an issue. But if the boys are given fluoride after the age of 12, increased risk of leg fracture.
Also been associated with arthritis, muscle disorders. It can affect the formation of antibodies and immune system function. And here's a very important one, inactivation of 62 enzymes and inhibition of more than 100.
Inactivation. So you're shutting off these enzymes that play a critically important role in maintaining health.
And all of these changes, there is no blood test to pick up on. You're not going to, it's subtle, you know, just undermining your health in a very subtle way. And this is just one factor. Now, add in all the other factors that we're exposed to, and now you begin to understand how the environment plays a role in our well-being. So what can you do? Well, you can not drink fluoridated water.
That's a little more difficult than we would assume. It seems that it's extremely difficult to find filters that will remove not only the chlorine, but the fluoride. So when you're living in a location where the water, municipal water system, contains fluoride, it's virtually impossible to get rid of it. So, Dr. Slavin, I know that you have some systems that are available for removing fluoride.
Well, reverse osmosis and distillation are the only two that I'm aware of that removes fluoride. But here's the problem. All right, let's say you take it out of the water that you're drinking. You haven't taken it out of the water that they're watering the crops with or that the animals are drinking on the farms. And I think there's a real problem. So the real solution is you have to stop adding fluoride to our environment, at least to our food supply and drinking supply.
Certainly that would be ideal, but it seems as though as I mentioned before, the corporate sales pitch for putting fluoride in the water is greater than the citizens' voices. Very important for people to understand that the fluoride chemical that is added to our water with the so-called intent of preventing dental cavities actually bears very little or next to no resemblance to the naturally occurring trace mineral fluoride. And as you began in this discussion, Dr. Slavin, it is an industrial waste. And if it were not being sold as an additive to the water, it would have to be a business expense to dispose of this chemical in a hazardous waste dump. So why are we possibly putting a hazardous waste in our water? It doesn't make any sense.
All right. I mean,
you agree with me?
We have to just filter our water. Oh, the other area to pay attention to is the toothpaste, especially in children, because they may be swallowing it.
Absolutely.
I think if you spit it out, probably not that big of a problem. So you want to avoid it in there. Eat more fresh, less processed foods, so you're limiting your exposure there. Buy organic grape juice and wine. So I guess, and the reason for that is many vineyards use a fluoride pesticide called cryolite. As a result, the levels of fluoride in U.S. grape juice and wine are consistently elevated. In 2005, the USDA reported that the average level of fluoride exceeded 2 parts per million for both white wine and white grape. The levels of fluoride in red wine are also elevated, and so are raisins. If you buy grape juice and wine, or if you are a heavy consumer of raisins, buy organic.
Okay. There's something else, and I believe it was in a recent issue of National Geographic, that there are people who are really seriously questioning the use of fluoride and the risk-benefit situation. I know that there is the possibility that fluoride is a neurotoxin. What is your take on that, Dr. Slavin?
Well, I think the overall message here.
And I think that's important for people to understand, the overall picture.
Well, the overall picture here is you can't believe everything the government tells you.
Oh,
I mean, in other words, you have to take everything with a grain of salt, because they have their vested interests, and you're talking about big business, you know, with the fluorides.
And see, that's where I say it isn't necessarily we can't believe everything the government tells us, and this is every different level of government, but also why is that? And in my view, the reason is that the corporations who have a different chemical to sell do a very, very good job of convincing the lawmakers that their chemical should be utilized, and utilized across the board. And I'm talking about fertilizers. I'm talking about pesticides. I'm talking about different chemicals that are added to everyday substances that we use, and we're told this is a good thing. But when you really investigate it, it is a terrible thing. And I'll go as commonly used as the hand sanitizers. When you understand the chemical that it's in the hand sanitizer, when you understand what's in your toothpaste, you want to be really careful about where you're buying those products.
Well, here's where I was coming from. You know, who to believe. Now, National Geographic suggested that anyone who questions water fluoridation is a conspiracy theorist. So, who wouldn't trust National Geographic, right?
Okay.
But
I'm stunned. National Geographic saying this? It's a very, very problematic issue to have such a well-regarded publication.
But last year, the journal Lancet Neurology released a study that was authored by a Harvard doctor that classified fluoride as a developmental neurotoxin.
Okay, so who would ever possibly connect fluoride and Asperger's syndrome?
Well, what does that mean, a developmental neurotoxin? Well, when they looked at children who were exposed to fluoride in the drinking water, on average, they had an IQ 7 points lower than those not exposed to those high levels of fluoride.
And I have an explanation for that. What trace mineral is the fluoride going to compete with? I'm going to answer my own question. Iodine.
That's a good point. Yep.
When people are deficient in iodine, there is certainly neurological developmental issues. all sorts of severe neurological issues are associated with mothers who are deficient in iodine during the course of their pregnancies.
And here's another issue that has to be considered. The majority of the studies done on fluoride were with levels less than 4 milligrams per liter, and yet it's showing the harmful effects of fluoride, and 4 milligrams per liter is under the EPA's allowable level. So it's a safe level, and it's causing real problems.
Absolutely stunning information. And, you know, earlier you were talking about infertility. Okay, well, here's issues associated with infertility and the fluoride. Here's issues associated with the neurological development of these infants and young children. And we have the information. The research is there. The whole iodine deficiency has been information that's been known for decades, and still we don't stand up and make decisions that are more supportive of good health.
So, you know, I'll repeat this. Who do we listen to? The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that's the CDC, and the American Dental Association continue to tout water fluoridation as safe and effective, even as evidence to the contrary becomes more and more apparent.
Okay, so we see that these different government departments are not there to protect the citizens or actually represent the good health of the citizens, but rather they are arms of corporate chemical producers.
Well,
very,
you know,
sad.
With all this information available, fluoride is still added to 2/3 of U.S. public water supplies, even though, as we mentioned before, it's been linked to serious health conditions. It damages your bones, your brain, your kidneys, the thyroid, the pineal gland, and even, ironically, your teeth, because that's what they say. It's going to prevent dental cavities. But here's the important thing. Water fluoridation began in 1945, even though in a 1943 Journal of the American Medical Association article which stated fluorides are general protoplasmic poisons, that means it's cellular poisons, it changes the permeability of the cell membrane by certain enzymes. So when you add this poison to the water, because it's supposed to help prevent tooth decay, and the rates of cavities have declined over the last 60 years, they want to credit the fluoride for it. Just like, you know, it's almost the same thing with vaccinations.
Ooh.
The incidence of various diseases went down, and they say, well, it's because you started vaccination, and yet you can show that this occurrence was happening before vaccinations were introduced because of better sanitation and better nutrition.
And that's where we really do need to acknowledge the progress that has been made. Better sanitation and better nutrition. Prior to the 1940s, the use of supplemental nutrition was significantly, I'm going to say non-existent, really, prior to 1940. Very, very little supplemental nutrition. However, the crops and the way that the food was distributed in this country was also very, very different, that there wasn't necessarily the contaminants in our crops. However, sanitation might not have been as supported as it is today. So you have to take a look at a much bigger picture than just looking at, okay, fluoride in the water, cavities have gone down. The ability to maintain clean teeth, access to dental care, so many different things, the substances that are going to maintain strong teeth and bones. This picture goes far beyond fluoridation.
Now, we were mentioning earlier, how do you reduce your exposure to fluoride? We said, all right, pay attention to the water you drink. Try and stay away from as much processed food as possible. Be aware that organic regular grape juice and wine could have high fluoride levels, so get organic.
Okay, very important. You know, people who are buying raisins, people who are buying grape juice for their children in those little aseptic containers, you have to choose organic because those crops are significantly exposed to fluoride.
Now, here's something I wouldn't have thought of. It says, be careful drinking too much tea, particularly bottled and instant varieties. The tea plant accumulates high levels of fluoride, and excess intake of tea is known to cause a painful bone disease called skeletal fluorosis.
Wow.
Some teas, though, contain high levels of health-boosting antioxidants. Not only are antioxidants good for health in general, they also help protect you from fluoride toxicity. So, you know, I'm still not sure what to recommend to people.
Okay. First of all, organic. I would say that is a good recommendation. Then, instead of the typical black teas, then you would go for green tea, white tea, possibly making a significant turn to herb teas.
Well, you want to get tea that has high levels of antioxidants yet low levels of fluoride. So the suggestion is get tea from young leaves. Now, I use tea bags, and they never tell you if the tea is old or young.
Okay, well, using tea bags, you would look for the box that said it was white tea or green tea. And my suggestion is don't choose those teas from China because, again, the level of pollution in some areas where those teas may be grown, that pollution is a possible problem. So if you want the highest quality green tea, Japanese green tea. White tea is the very, very immature leaves, so they haven't been put in contact with so much of the fertilizers or the different substances that would increase their fluoride content.
You mentioned China. I think to be on the safe side, don't consume anything grown in China.
Okay, now, is that... Do we have to be politically correct, or is... that's an issue, and I think that people don't necessarily understand that certain foods from China might be contaminated with substances that you don't want to be exposed to.
Well, the air is polluted there. They don't have the same regulation over various manufacturing practices, so you can't be sure. So I said just to be on the safe side. Here's another one that, I don't use nonstick coated pans for cooking, but they said those types of cooking pans can significantly increase the fluoride content of food. So switch over to a ceramic or another type of safe pan, stainless steel, cast iron.
Cast iron for people who have low red blood cell hemoglobin hematocrit levels, very, very good way to support your iron levels and enhance your red blood cell profile.
And here's something. I don't know. We're talking about the fluoroquinolones. Those are antibiotics like Cipro, which are fluorinated, which means they contain something called a carbon fluoride bond. It's strong enough to resist being broken down by the body, but this isn't always the case. Some fluorinated drugs have been found to be metabolized into fluoride in the body and therefore increase your exposure to fluoride. A perfect example is Cipro and other fluorinated chemicals that are currently known to break down to fluoride in the body are different anesthetics like isoflurane and sevoflurane, but we
now,
wouldn't know about that.
People wouldn't necessarily know what kind of anesthetic
but
they're getting.
But Cipro people know.
Okay.
And another one is Levaquin, is another one in that category.
Okay. Now, here's my statement with regard to the antibiotics. Minimize your exposure to antibiotics. There are a wide range of choices out there before you have to make the commitment, I have not been successful, I must use an antibiotic.
No, agreed. Antibiotics, even the mainstream medicine admits antibiotics are overutilized. Here's another area I wouldn't have even thought about, but meats, most meats that are pulverized into a pulp, for example, chicken fingers and chicken nuggets, Janet's making a face. It's a good thing we're on radio.
Because it was a really bad face.
Well, you know, when they make the chicken fingers and chicken nuggets, they use a mechanical deboning process. This mechanical deboning process increases the quantity of bone particles in the meat. Oh, okay, now I can see that. And, of course, in the bone, that's where the fluoride accumulates. So the higher the levels of bone particles in the deboned, mechanically deboned meat, you're going to have more in the flesh that you're eating. Of all the meats that are mechanically deboned, chicken meat has consistently been found to have the highest levels. Thus, minimize consumption of mechanically deboned chicken. And I'm thinking of the fast food places where they get the chicken nuggets, and that's what the kids are eating. So who would have thought that that was a source of fluoride?
I never recognized that it was a very important source of fluoride contamination. But one of the things that I tell people is that pulverized, and I use the term loosely, meat, is bleached to maintain a uniform color and to give the impression that it's all meat, and it is not, and that's very sad.
Other things could get in there, huh?
So when you're biting into that chicken nugget, understand that it is full of many other things besides the actual meat of the chicken, and it's chemically contaminated.
Now, I haven't looked this up. Do we live in a country that allows fluoridated salt to be sold?
Well, isn't that interesting? I would never ever have imagined that someone would fluoridate salt. And, you know, I routinely talk to people now and say, well, they get their iodine from iodized salt. And I say, well, where are you getting iodized salt? Because they pulled iodized salt off the market a number of years ago. So you have to be very, very well aware where to get the trace minerals, specifically iodine, I'm also thinking of selenium, other trace minerals that are essentially wiped out by the fluoride and the chlorine.
Yeah, so let me see if I can find out what countries might be adding fluoride to the salt.
It's such an incredibly difficult subject to get true balanced information, because a lot of times the information that you're getting about the so-called benefits of fluoride are literally marketing articles. They're not necessarily true scientific research that's giving you the full picture. And what I always talk to people about is the risk-benefit situation. What are you risking in order to achieve that so-called perceived benefit?
I think at the end of the day, let's see, legal aspects of fluoride and salt, particularly with the European Union, says in seven European countries, there are national legal regulations or salt producers have obtained individual authorization for the production and marketing of fluoridated edible salt. So we know what's going on in the European Union, which is usually a little stricter than we are. It says all European countries practice salt fluoridation on a voluntary basis, and in the near future, are European regulations expected to supersede the national condition. So I think they're going to do
okay.
With
now
that
was in 2006 with regard to salt fluoridation in the European Union. Okay, very, very interesting. The countries that are part of this salt fluoridation. And it would be very interesting to me to see how well the population has responded to possibly purchasing these fluoridated salt products.
So it's interesting. In that report, they bring up Codex Alimentarius again. And we'll have to do another program about that because we haven't talked about that in a while. And that's basically, and I think it's being overseen or being run by the United Nations, trying to control every country's access to various nutritional products. So, so here, just you know, just another thing. You want to, you know, we're not talking about. Well, we are talking about ways to stay healthy, and in many cases, ways to stay healthy is to avoid certain things.
Okay, general principles, and these are some that are associated with the Codex Alimentarius. Essential nutrients may be added to foods for the purpose of restoration and establishing nutritional equivalents of substitute foods. So let's get all the fake food and add chemicals to them to achieve what we are establishing as nutritional equivalents. Fortification/enrichment and ensuring an appropriate nutrient composition of special purpose food. All right, so we're thinking about things like ensure and ensure for kids. And
well, I think the real take home here is eat food in its most natural form. The more you change its original form, the more likely you are to be exposed to unwanted chemicals.
Yeah. And yes, we will do a whole show on Codex and what Codex Alimentarius might mean for us. Yeah. Those of us who are very focused on supporting our nutritional well-being.
So drink pure water. Make sure your food is, the produce is organic. When you're eating chicken or meat, make sure that it's for the meat grass-fed, hormone-free.
Antibiotic-free.
And when it comes to fish, make sure it's wild and not farm-raised. And those are things that help reduce your exposure to these chemicals because, you know, the more we learn, the more we realize just how exposed to toxins on the planet we are.
And where can we go in this world to escape these toxins? And more the answer is they are everywhere. And for everyone who has tuned in to naturaldocradio.com, thanks for visiting us today. And make sure you visit often because we have new and interesting audio articles for you to tune into all the time. Thanks for visiting.